Hey, folks, it's Spoiler in Time. This is the sister or brother. It's the sibling show to Cord Killers, where on Cord Killers, we talk about how to watch and what services and devices to use. Here, we've watched the stuff and we get to talk about what we thought about what we watched. We're going to spoil Deadwood. That's our new library show, episode one of season one of that. We'll talk about the latest episode of Mr. Robot, episode seven of this season, season three. Season one, episode one of Future Man from Hulu and the movie Coco. I'm Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood is here as well.
Hells yes, but most importantly, everyone's wondering what's going on with the winter movie draft. Tom? I don't want to get overly optimistic here, but we might have an interesting fight on our hands.
We might. I was just about to say the same thing with the same kind of caveat, which is we are at 326 million. Cord Killers, Team Cord Killers is at 380 million, which is not us, by the way. That's Kate and Milongo. And we have Pitch Perfect 3 still to come. They have The Greatest Showman still to come. So if we pretended like Team Frog Pants didn't exist, this would be like a battle.
Yeah, I think it might still be a battle because, all right,
maybe
Murder on the Orient Express looks like it's petering out at around 75 million.
Which is good, actually. It's better than we expected.
Yeah, and so let's say there's a chance it could drift all the way up to 100 million. And let's say Pitch Perfect 3 is a breakout hit. Let's say it does 120 million, right?
Okay.
That puts us at, like 470. Cord Killers, similar situation. Let's say The Greatest Showman is a bigger hit than we'd expect.
Wait, and how do we get to 470 with Pitch Perfect? Okay, yeah.
I can see Pitch that. Perfect doing, let's say, 120 if it's super good. So 470 and Cord Killers, you know, if Greatest Showman does, you know, 90 and they get enough extra baggage, they can hit 470 as well. 470 is, would represent
85% of 552 million.
And so 552, what did The Force Awakens do then?
700 something.
Oh, geez. Well, we're a little bit boned.
But you think there won't be a drop off?
No, I did.
There will be a drop off. I don't know there'll be a $200 million drop off.
Well, but also, what a vote of confidence this movie's getting that Rian Johnson just got awarded his own trilogy to write from the ground up. And the fact that they also confidently say, this movie's 2.5 hours long. Don't worry, you'll thank us later. These are bold struts that Disney's making right now. That makes me think they're super confident in The Last Jedi. So I smart money's on everybody who picked the Last Jedi as the winner. But I like imagining that there might be a battle here.
Yeah, 75% of The Force Awakens was 688 million.
oh my. So, what have you been watching, Tom?
Congratulations, Brian and Scott. Kind of.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. It's looking more like a fight than we thought it was. I think that's what we're trying to say.
Certainly an interesting battle for second place.
One thing that I saw this week was Justice League, and I pretty much said everything I need to say about it on Cord Killers, so yeah. Go watch that.
Well, you know what's
funny? I should have seen instead was Coco, which is apparently a delightful movie that you and Bryce, our producer, saw.
Oh, Coco is so good.
I think
Coco's incredible.
I think I'm very curious how much of what I loved about Coco came from not having any idea what to expect. Mm-hmm. You know, going in with a blank slate. I had even forgotten there was going to be a Frozen short at the beginning of it. And by the way, short is a relative term because
it was a TV. It was a 30-minute TV episode that they decided not to air on ABC.
Yes.
It is 21 minutes of Frozen and musicals. Okay. It's good. It's well made. Literally not what I wanted to see.
You didn't watch it with Callie. She's 4 years old. And we took her to meet Anna and Elsa in Norway at Epcot. And it was like, it was pretty great seeing her delight and all that stuff. And you're right. It was well made.
It was just...
And I actually have warmed up to Frozen, so to speak. I originally really didn't care for it, but I've learned to appreciate some of the smart things that they've done with it. And going into it primed, I had a I had more fun watching that 30-minute short than I did watching the original movie.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
It is nice and tight.
Yes, like, exactly. Like,
I haven't seen Frozen. I don't know that I'm going to, but for 20 minutes, that was a fine thing. It's Christmas spirit, but holiday, winter holiday spirit.
Well, so we get through it, and I'm just seeing everything through my three girls' eyes, and then Coco starts, and the only thing I know about Coco going into it is it's based on Dia de los Muertos. For me, the Grim Fandango holiday, as I call it. and I loved Grim Fandango. I loved the idea of playing a game in that world of the dead.
And I was similar to you. Like, I know, okay, so a kid enters the land of the dead somehow, for some reason, and he's kind of got to blend in a little bit, and there are other, skeleton, formerly living people. But I knew there was a musical element, because I saw in one of those, like, pre-roll teasers, like a behind, like, oh, here's a video clip of a child, you know, voicing the kid.
He appears to be singing.
They recorded the people playing guitar so that they could do the guitar motions and all. So I knew it was somehow a musical also.
Yes. Well,
or it had music in it.
So, Tom, the reason it's so great is that it does the most precious thing you can get from a movie. The real magic that exists is the magic of surprise, and a good surprise lays everything out in front of you, and then it all collapses together in a delightful, surprising way, and you're like, of course this is how it all throws together. Why didn't I see it? And it does a fine job of doing that. There's a like, character, yeah. And at this point, if you plan to watch
the movie,
wait a minute.
You're telling me that the prime benefit of Coco is to go in not knowing anything about Coco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
and then you're going to spoil it in front of me, even though I haven't seen it.
We can turn our Skype connection off to you for a few minutes.
We can call you right back. We can call you right back
when you're done.
Here, we'll just.
Okay. All right. We're just going to hang up on. There you go. You're muted. So you can't hear anything.
You can't hear us.
You're okay? Okay, good. We've now muted, so Tom's not hearing it.
That's a great thing.
So, okay, what do you hate about Tom? Because I'll tell you what I what drives me nuts.
He's too friggin' tall.
And his salt and pepper beard is so crazy.
No, but the whole father, great grandfatherhood ordeal is so great, because it all sets up like, well, of course he has the guitar. It couldn't be anything other than.
Well, it's like to the point that you're sort of rolling your eyes, like you're beating me over the head with, yes, we get it. It's his. He's gonna meet his great grandfather. He's super important.
Yeah. Well, and the introduction of Manny, which is more of a coincidence in timing than anything at the beginning, does a good job of like never giving you any strong hints, like, oh, it's probably gonna be.
Oh, no. Well, and they portray him as just a scoundrel, right? You got this guy. Well, of course there's going to be a scoundrel. There's scoundrels in every world.
A fast-talking guy who knows his way around.
Yeah. And I was already appreciating him on his own merit, and we got far enough along in the story that I'm like, oh, well, I guess he's there to give us a chuckle and to make us, you know, realize.
Or to help us contextualize the world, right? Because he's there for that
he's
whole
our
side
guide.
Jag.
Yeah.
He's there with that whole jag where his friend is forgotten right in front of us. And we see someone, like, double die in front of us. And it's this really poignant scene. Tom, we're going to also mute you on this side because you're just hitting your microphone now.
He can't hear you.
Yeah, just seeing this guy die the real death.
There's two really great moments. One is realizing that this is the kid's great grandfather and that he's the aggrieved party. And then the very quick, like okay, so it's a heist movie now. Let's do our heist, and we did it. But that sweet moment with that going back to the land of living and seeing Coco and being remembered. Coco. And then the next thing, 1 year later, and Coco's just on the other side. And I love the way Coco's face, like she looks like a genuine old person, you know, the unattractive hairs, the unkempt body, the disconnect from the hustle and bustle of the family all around her. It just was so alive. Gorgeous, beautiful. It's just amazing. It's just wonderful.
It's incredible, and someone actually, I think I was watching the Double Toasted review. They were talking about it, and they compared it a little bit to Up, because Up is a similar sort of thing, right? Like two people going into an unknown wilderness, and trying to make their way back.
Right.
There's some similarities.
So sort of, yeah, kind of reversed, but yeah, yeah.
Sure. And I have so much respect for everything, because especially that turn where at the end, it totally makes sense that, of course, he's not De La Cruz's great-great-grandson, right? Because, like, anybody would have known about it. And there would be anything other than, you know, a forgotten family.
Well, like, plus, also, I love the fact that the songwriting, the fact that his signature song is Remember Me, is... on the one hand, it's romantic, it's grandiose. On the other hand, oh, it's a second layer. It matters that you're remembered when you're right. in the land of the dead. But then you kind of run it through that third filter with the whole context. You're like, it is a desperate plea for immortality mm-hmm. from a sad man who was not as talented as, I mean, even though it was written by, but right. every
well,
time
and at
sings,
the time they were up and coming.
Yes, you know, yes.
The, yeah. It's great. The whole soundtrack is fantastic.
I'll go see it again. Yeah, you let me know if you want to go sometime, and I'll just go.
Did you cry?
I cry all the time. I have kids.
I normally don't, but I cried at some point before the kid was singing "Remember Me" to Coco, and then once he started singing "Remember Me" to Coco, I cried all the way through the credits because it was just you really get a feeling that they are trying to give Mexican culture a very real take.
Yeah.
The way that they're showing the family dynamic, the way that the city that he lives in is celebrating the Day of the Dead. Like, it all feels, it doesn't feel like a joke, and it doesn't play up death in an American way of like a scary thing or it's not a zombie movie in any way.
Yeah.
You know, and very subtle things like that show just a really strong amount of love and care for
loved the world. The sidekick dog, the completely hairless, and
yes.
then that
Dante.
Moment like yeah,
Dante,
yeah,
come on.
never give a dog a street dog a name. Yeah.
So was Dante, so at the end he turns into one of the spirit animals.
Yeah.
Was he always one?
You know,
because he comes back as a dog, so does Coco's mom.
What they indicate is that the longer you spend in the day of in the land of the dead, the more you eventually the kid starts to become, you know, a skeleton, and so the dog, you know, the kid's got this much humanity, the dog's got this much humanity, and the dog quicker to turn, and he's like, well, guess what, you're a spirit animal now. He's like, that's cool,
man.
But just all right, here, let's bring Tom back. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. And that's why we secretly hated Coco. Terrible movie.
That's why I oughta.
You want to get into Future Man?
Yeah. Please, Tom, go see it, because I don't mind revisiting this and talking about it next week.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no. Eileen and I intended to see it, and we just didn't. We decided to eat prosciutto and sit on the couch instead.
Who could blame you?
So, Future Man. Last night, Brian texted me and said, you got to watch Future Man, which I'll be honest, and Brian knows this, sending me a you got to watch on a Sunday evening is a dicey proposition, because if Eileen and I are watching something that we're both into, I'll probably fall asleep before I get a chance to watch something on my own.
Sure.
And then the next day I'm all into DTS and stuff. But I was like, oh, maybe I'll squeeze it in tomorrow afternoon. Turned out, as soon as we were done watching, I think it was The Flash, Eileen's like, I'm kind of done for now. I'm like, oh, great. Do you mind if I watch Future Man? Which I did. So I put it on, and I kept going back and forth between, this is dumb, I don't like it, and, well, that was really clever, that was a really like surprising way of doing that, well, that was really interesting. So I'm still mixed feelings about the whole thing. You know, one of the best lines was given away in the trailer, which is like, you guys, that's the last Starfighter, you know, whatever. But they kept bringing me moments like that where he, you know, what was supposed to happen next is what did not happen next. And I actually really liked the trope that it's built on, that this really kindly man that felt like a natural reveal to say, oh, he works at this lab. Oh, but he's a janitor. Oh, but he has a really nice boss. It just felt like it was part of that rhythm of surprise. Turns out to be the pivoting of the plot. The, you know, the fact that he like jizzes all over the lady from the future, and that the guy has herpes on his lip.
And the best part is, like, you think that that bit is done, and at the beginning of the next episode, the guy complains about that happening, and then immediately, what's his name? Josh. I want to make
Josh.
Main character says just like, all right, look, if you, he's like, if you're just going to hold that over me from now on, just get it over with. Just you do it to me and then we're done.
No, that's in the premiere episode.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right.
Yeah. He says, look, you're just going to keep bringing this up. It's your turn. And the guy's like, what? No, that's
Josh,
not how it works.
The main character's name is Josh. He's played by Josh Hutcherson, who you might know from The Hunger Games, whose character's name is Josh Future Man.
Futterman.
Whatever. It says Future Man. Come on.
Well, I love how on the nose everything is. And I love that bit with that they do. Where it's like, that's just the last Starfighter or whatever, you know, analyzing everything through these tropes, where it's like, this is blank meets blank, is the way everybody in Hollywood pitches everything. And then what's great is they keep doing that with each episode's conceit as he figures out in conversation, like, well, we went to the past and a bunch of stuff changed. And then somebody says, so it's like a Back to the Future situation. And then they go into like a 2-minute conversation about like, yeah, but it's really messed up because Marty McFly comes back as if he's experiencing it now for the first time because he's living it. He's like, he has to fake his way through every conversation he's having. He doesn't remember any of this.
Yeah, so this is the first episode was directed by Seth Rogen, right?
I don't know. I know he's an
executive producer on it, yeah. But I thought I saw him get a directing credit. And I see his humor fingerprints all over this.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this much. It gets better and better. Episode 2 is better than episode 1. Episode 3 is better than episode 2. I hope this, when it was pitched to me, everyone who's told it to me has said, oh, it's a science fiction time travel movie. That's pretty funny. And I was like, oh, okay. And then when I saw it, I'm like, no, you are all wrong and dumb. This is just a straight up comedy that happens to be themed around science fiction time travel tropes. And once you think of it that way, you don't mind the low quality production budget. You don't mind the cheapness of it. No. I enjoyed all the that guy faces that I recognized, including Haley Joel Osment. What's his name? Keith something.
Keith David.
The guy who plays the president in Rick and Morty. And even Josh Futterman. I'm really, really enjoying it, and I hope you guys go along for the whole ride because I want to keep talking about it.
All right, let's move on to Mr. Robot, episode 7, season 3, where everything is not changed much from the last episode.
I was just thinking the same thing. Is it grating on you yet? It keeps being really exciting, even though what's changing?
I mean, it's. It's probably, because I have faith in these creators, I have faith in Sam Esmail, it's probably building up tension in a really good way, because it is, I'm not losing interest. I still want to watch the next one. They're giving me just enough to keep me going. But when I think back on what happened, I'm like, well, not much. I mean, White Rose told that guy that he was going to be out because he was done with him. And he was mad at him for the slight that he gave him one time.
Yeah. But again, I think maybe the problem, if it could be said to be a problem, is that you're focusing on the mega story, the main story. It's like, but then again, watching X-Files, you didn't watch everything just for more stories on the black goo. You know, you watched for the monster of the week. And the vignette of the framing and the assassination of two patsies from F Society.
That was really good.
Was super compelling. Well, and by Rami Malek's Mr. Robot's friend from prison, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and that plot does put, you know, for the FBI, except for the agent, whatever her name is,
Dom.
Yeah. Should put the final nail in the coffin on. It was these two people who did the explosions and. We just stopped them, or they just did the airline traffic thing, and now we got them.
And that's it. It's all over, folks. You can go back to your society now. There's no effing of it that is going to happen anymore.
Or it's enough fodder, at least, for, you know, the FBI director who we found out either in this episode or the previous episode, who to be in the payroll of the Dark Army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? No, he was helping out with keeping Schlitterbahn. What was his name? Wellick. He was keeping Wellick hidden.
Schlitterbahn!
I don't know why that's what I had associated with.
I very much enjoyed the Hat Tip to Knight Rider, my favorite show when I was in second grade.
Brilliant. And the fact, and this is what I love about Sam Esmail, is they're like, we're just going to replace the opening music with that now. Like, that is going to be the open. We're going to do the high shot of the car all the way through. It was great.
I'll tell you what, man, I wish there was more to say about this episode outside of the side vignette was good. I didn't mind the continued conversations between, let's talk about our mega theory, this business.
Okay.
This is the first time we're seeing Portia Doubleday possibly indicating that she's crazy. Like,
right?
not that she's about to time travel, but that she's crazy enough to believe that time travel is possible, and we'll find out that she's nuts. So the more they make her the linchpin, the less comfortable I get with our theory. Because
you think it's a red herring?
Well, I think it could be. Okay. The big reveal could be she's crazy and she thinks that they can time travel to fix it. And now she's got shot in the head and she's dead or something. Yeah.
And here's what I think is great about that is that maybe they knew, okay, these are pretty subtle hints about time travel or alternate realities, but Reddit's going to find them. So let's, in episode 7, just shove it in their face in a way that says, no, you guys, you're wrong. Angela's obviously crazy. So that we're like, oh, well, maybe she thinks that's true. And then now we're like, could go either way.
Because keep in mind, I've not heard anybody talking about this angle on it. And so this could be the episode to just like loudly announce it. Yeah. Then again, I don't hear a lot of people talking about Mr. Robot.
Yeah, I don't look into the fan. I can't look into that because that really messed up last season for me.
Yeah, because like, it just gives you too many ideas. And
prison, okay.
And even Westworld kind of got messed up by just there are people who figured it out in episode 2, you know?
Either way, simmering. It's simmering, you know? I'm not going to take it off the stove.
I wonder.
Need a better metaphor.
they're setting up this really hard sci-fi turn, and part of me wonders if this is going to be. Well, I don't know. They started off the season trying to say, "I won't lie to you as much," from Elliot's side, right?
Yeah.
The jail situation.
Right.
But when I said that, I lied.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if this is all leading up to. Oh no! This is Elliot. Mind being affected by him taking the drug.
You're afraid that this could be a dream season or something,
come on, we weren't actually gonna do that. It's all fake memories. Something I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's enough non-Elliot stuff going on that I hope that's not true.
Yeah.
Well, and to be honest, I like the fact that they've shorn up so many of these characters. And I appreciate the fact that they're trimming some of the characters that aren't going to go anywhere. Like the rest of F Society were all dead ends. And so now they're off the table.
And they were loose threads, too.
Right. Correct. Yeah. And I don't know. Everything's collapsing to a core group of what? 7 or 8 characters that we truly care about and follow.
It's turning into a singularity.
Yes, eventually there will be only one. Yeah. You will have the gravity well that will suck in our lives.
They're all Elliot. I do like that we don't know if the time travel thing is right or not. We don't know what White Rose really wants. We don't know where Elliot's going now that F Society has been collapsed. What's Darlene going to do? Is Dom going to be off the case? Is she going to just go back to being Meryl Streep's daughter now? Like, we have no idea about any of that.
Is she actually Meryl Streep's daughter?
She is.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, how about that?
All right, let's talk about Deadwood, or as I call it, Justified Goes West and Back in Time.
That was the original title of it, but then they pointed out, Justified hasn't been created yet. Why don't we come up with time something travel. Else?
No, it's funny because not only is Timothy Olyphant in it, but one of the villains of season 6 of Justified is McCall, the guy who's got it in Barnacle Jake. No.
Barnacle Jake.
What's wrong with my mind? Wild Bill Hickok. He's the guy. I can remember McCall's name, but I can't remember Wild Bill Hickok.
Wild Bill Hickok is the only name that you knew before the episode started, and you called him Barnacle Jake.
Yeah, that's the thing that just happened. Yes. So anyway, I was like, oh, look, another Justified character. That's cool. And it's, you know, I'm a marshal. Like Timothy Oliphant is playing a marshal, and Wild Bill Hickok is playing a. They're both former marshals, I guess, at this point.
I got to tell you. Now, keep in mind, my history with this is I watched the first season and loved every moment of it. And between watching first season and the second season, I got word that it had been canceled. And this was right around the time that I watched Firefly. And I was like, I can't do it again. I can't. Like, I just remembered how angry I got near the end of the run of Firefly. Like, I don't want to invest myself watching this, knowing that it's being ended prematurely before its time. And so I never watched the second season. So I'm rewatching this first episode again. And there are some things that changed, of course, being more familiar with Timothy Oliphant and knowing a bit about where the story goes made it much easier for me to find my footing. But none of that is the star of the show. The star of the show is, was, and always be, will be the Shakespearean, pornographic, melodic, hypnotic form of speech from the most amazing seersucker that I'm saying seersucker of Ian McShane and all the characters in that world. It holds up and it is electric and it just brings you right on in.
Yeah, the combination. I always find the Shakespearean thing to be overemphasized, but there definitely is a Shakespearean lilt to everything. But combined with cursing, right, is just there's something magic about that, like. Old-timey flavor with modern curse words that says, oh, okay, I totally get the differences between how people talk and why they say the things they do, and Driscoll with his Irish accent, and it's just as magical. And I saw probably 4 or 5 episodes of Deadwood, so I've seen this one, and definitely having seen it before did help me get my bearings a little quicker and be able to see more of what's going on because I wasn't trying to wade through who everybody was yet. But yeah, it just, I think it's going to be a theme of our conversations, but it just is a shame that this never got to get to its final end.
Yeah. I got to tell you, man, it was very difficult. And I think it will continue to be very difficult for me to not want to binge this. Like, I'm going to stick week to week because that's our job. But the moment it was over, I could have just spent the next 3 days gobbling all of these up. It'd be great.
Yeah, I can totally get that. And it also just getting a little meta here. I know we're not talking about a lot in the plot. And I think it's because we've both seen it. But yes, you know, you're in Deadwood. It's on Indian land. It's lawless. There's, you know, so anything goes, and the only law is what people agree is going on between them. And so we got a guy who already wants to gun down Wild Bill Hickok, and Wild Bill Hickok is known for killing people. And then there's a guy who killed a bunch of people, because things went wrong in a robbery, and he tries to blame it on the natives. And so, yes, you've got all these setups, for things that we're going to talk about in future episodes. But the other thing that hit me as we're watching this, I was like, huh. So we saw a cop show, The Wire. Then another cop show, The Shield. Then we had a cop show Western, Justified. Then we had a Western sci-fi, Firefly. Then we went to a Western kind of lawman thing, Deadwood. So I don't know if it's like just kind of a cool stream of consciousness of the shows we've picked or what?
It is sort of morphing, and you could throw in there the fact that we watched Westworld as well in there, another sci-fi Western themed thing. I think they did an astonishing job of laying out the chess pieces. And I felt by the end of that very first episode, I understood Timothy Oliphant. You know, this is a guy who's setting aside his past life, of being a lawman, specifically wanting to just make an honest living and be free. You know, I could appreciate that libertarian bent. Let's go to the land of the free. But also him being unable to let wrong things happen. He's surrounded by corruption, but that's fine. You know, you're going to find corruption anywhere you find freedom. And yeah. I'm just going to do my thing.
And when he confronts corruption, he does it by drawing a line. Take your game elsewhere. I'm going to try to stop you playing your game. Just don't do it here.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, is how transparent the lies are. And you get the vague sense that everybody has gold stars in their eyes because they're all convinced they're going to be rich and they're getting played, you know. And you know, I've worked in Las Vegas and watched that happen, you know, right in front of my eyes. And I think that's a fair enough way to sort of, you know, you got our players and then you got the masses. Ian McShane as the de facto, you know, he certainly perceives himself as the guy who runs the town. Though there are some people who disagree, we see him competently handling a PR disaster and callously and darkly, and then you know, sending off the body to Mr. Wu. And and then Wild Bill Hickok, I like the fact that we have two new you know, kind of gravitational bodies entering it. And as a result, like, everything was simple to Ian McShane's character, who was Al Jorgensen. No, that's the lead singer of Ministry. Swearingen.
I think it's Particle Jake.
Al Swearingen. Al Swearingen likes things simple. He likes an orbit where he's the only center and everything spins around him, right? Then in walks Wild Bill Hickok. And that is a disturbing enough vector that it has him somewhat vexed, because you don't know how that's going to affect everything orbiting around you when another and in fact, you know, Wild Bill Hickok is made an offer through a intermediary saying, hey, you know, sure, it would be great if he played here an awful lot. And that works. And then, you know, our gravitational body, our hero, you know, that really is barely noticed by all the other players is Timothy Oliphant. And it's great to see him come in so small and humble, knowing or suspecting that he'll have a great impact on what is about to transpire.
Yeah. No, I well summarized, because that is the pins, and everything else is in the orbit of either Wild Bill Hickok or Swearingen or Seth. Seth's not in anybody's orbit yet. And that's kind of, you know, not pretending like I don't know anything else that's going to happen. That's one of the questions you have when you watch this is, where is he going to? It looks like he might pal up with Wild Bill, but is that really where he's going to be? Or is he going to get pulled into Swearingen's orbit? Or what's going to happen there?
What's also curious is the way Barnacle Jake's reputation precedes him, and everybody's freaking out like, oh, my God, it's that murderer, that crazy. And yet he composes himself with really kind of the utmost civility. You know, there's a brief fire burning beneath the surface when there's that moment that they're playing the game, and he says, oh, I outdrew Wild Bill Hickok. And he's like, you mean the cards, right? Because, like, very clearly indicating, like, are you going to say those words and be coy? Because there's a fire burning here. And he's like, and then, you know, makes him calm down. It'll be interesting for us to see the Hulk to his banner show up at some point, which I assume will happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, watch along with us. There's 36 episodes, so it's not as short as Firefly. We'll be able to do this for a little longer, and quite enjoyable. I have to say.
Yeah. If this is one you haven't seen, or if you have seen it, I'd recommend you guys watch along with us. This is going to be a pretty good one.
Thanks, everybody, for supporting us at patreon.com/cordkillers. Don't forget, if we get to $1,850 or people, we're going to be able to break up these spoiler end times into their individual show-related bits, so they'll be easier to find if you go back and watch other stuff. Like, maybe you didn't watch Firefly with us. You can just get those if we hit that mark. So help us out, patreon.com/cordkillers. Spread the word, and we'll spoil you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.